Welcome to Series 5 of My Life in Design, brought to you by the DBA and design-focused PR agency Redsetter. I'm Claire Blythe, co-founder of Redsetter. This series, I'll be speaking to more people who are shaping the world of design, finding out how they discovered that design was a thing you could base a career around, and how they got to where they are today. This week, I'm here with Emily Ricard, CEO of the global creative company Buck. Emily grew her career in production, working on animation and live action for brands such as TikTok, Apple, Google, Airbnb, EA Sports, Slack, PlayStation, 7up, Nike, Adidas. A particular favourite of mine is the key animation sequence that Buck did in Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. The list goes on. But Emily, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to chat.
I'm particularly interested in talking to you, actually. I really want to talk to you to get a sort of a different point of view of lots of the podcasts have been fantastic and they've been with brand designers who I hugely admire. But it's really good to have a bit of a mix of type of creativity on the podcast, actually. And I love the way you come from production and to more about live action and animation.
I love that. I love that as well, because I think that as producers, we consider ourselves creatives. And I think that if you ask any producer who guides the creative process as their career choice, like they consider themselves a creative, they have a seat at the creative table. So when I got your email, I was like, that's awesome, because I think we are so intrinsic to that process that we should be in the creative conversation, you know, and it's a really viable career choice where you get to work with creatives. It's super fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the sort of thing that I don't know. I don't think I realized it was out there when I was younger, sort of teenager, that kind of thing. So it's really interesting to hear. Let's start at the beginning then of how you got started. When you were a kid, like when you were growing up, did you think I'd like to get involved in a creative career?
I think like most people who end up in sort of design or animation or any kind of marketing, I wanted to be a filmmaker. I thought way back then that I would be a writer and a director. I wrote some terrible screenplays and I thought, truly, I did a year of a business degree actually straight out of school, mostly to please my parents, I think. And then I realized that it wasn't really for me. And it's kind of crazy how things have turned around and I ended up back in a business focused role. But after that, I decided to study journalism. I also had aspirations of being a political correspondent. Yeah, I did. Yeah. And so I did a bachelor degree in journalism, international politics. But one of the minors that I took was film production. You know, obviously I still had that kind of feeling in the back of my mind that I was wanting to be creative and do something creative, and filmmaking was a passion.
This is when you were in Sydney.
Yeah, it was when I was in Sydney, exactly. So I grew up in Australia. Yeah, and I actually went to university in a country town called Bathurst. They have the best journalism program. So that's where I ended up. And when I did film production, I got really excited about that process. And I felt like I was able to be a little more creative than I would in journalism. I did work in journalism for a little minute. Fashion journalism, no, not quite politics. And then, yeah, a little further away from politics than I probably would have thought, but super fun. It was interesting. I was young, obviously. It was a lot of air kisses and champagne. But I was working for a really wonderful fashion journalist who I really admired and respected, Jane de Telliger, back at the Sydney Morning Herald. Yeah, it was an interesting and it was a great time, but I realized it wasn't really my passion. As fun as the clothes were, it wasn't what I was really excited about talking about. So then I jumped across into TV production and then made the leap across into more narrative format. You know, I worked in a little bit of reality TV and ended up in narrative format as an assistant director across TV series production and then also film production. And I stayed there for quite a while in Australia and Melbourne. Yeah.
How did you make the leap? How did you even know the jobs were out there? Is it just literally calling them up or getting in touch, looking at the websites?
It was my boyfriend at the time. Okay, who I ended up marrying. He was my first husband. We're no longer married. He's a great guy though, and still a great actor. But he was an actor back then. So I had that kind of experience in actually as a producer across kind of reality TV. It was a show called Starstruck, which I think is actually a UK format originally. It was like a little bit like The Voice or something like that. It was a singing show. And I was segment producing for them, like going out and recording, like, you know, some of their kind of, you know, out on the road content. And then, yeah, my boyfriend was an actor and we moved to Melbourne together for him to work on a TV drama. And he was like, hey, you would be a good assistant director. Like, I, you know, that, why don't you come and sort of check it out on set? And so I came on set and I sort of, you know, spent a couple of days watching and learning. And I was like, yeah, that'd be cool. So that's what I did. I kind of, you know, stayed in that career for a while, actually, and, you know, was a third assistant director, then a second assistant director, then a first assistant director. And then I realized getting up at 4 a.m. wasn't fun.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's what's involved in. So did you originally direct movies and go from there?
Yeah. I mean, an assistant director is actually, it was not dissimilar to production in my mind. You weren't actually directing. You were running the set. So you were scheduling, making sure, you know, that we're getting through the call sheet on time. You're figuring out what we'll shoot when. You're working with the creatives, the, you know, the art direction team, the director. So you were essentially moving all the pieces around to make sure that you could create that film or create that piece of television. And those skills were incredibly important. Being out there and on set, on location or in a studio all the time, you're, you know, on your feet, you're talking to five people at once, you know, the stress is high and you're making quick decisions and managing creative egos. It's something that I'm actually quite good at. I'm quite proud of it. But yeah, it was a good kind of learning ground for production.
You jump to what you're doing now as CEO of Buck. That must be amazing experience to do that, sort of learning how to manage large groups of people. And
totally.
Yeah.
And, you know, how to speak to networks, you know, to be able to kind of level yourself up and answer to networks or different kind of stakeholders in that process. It was good. It was a really good experience. And I was still fairly young then. And it was great. I loved it. Then I moved to London just for a new experience. And in London, I decided to sort of pivot to production. And that's when I started, that was when I got my first job as a producer at a sort of design and animation company. And that just sort of came about because a friend owned it and he was looking for someone and he knew that I was a hard worker. And I just moved over there and I was looking for a gig and I loved it. I kind of fell in love with production and really working more in the sort of motion graphics world then.
That's the sort of thing, isn't it, that once you get into an industry and it can be really hard to break into it, but the more people you meet, the more people you can meet and the easier it becomes to sort of break through and get those jobs, basically.
Yeah, totally. And back, you know, I'd never heard of After Effects. I'd never, you know, I didn't know anything about the animation process or even really about design because I felt like, you know, I was coming from a world of filmmaking. But the, again, like those skills that you learn in how to organize, how to champion your team, how to kind of guide creatives through to an outcome, all of those things are translatable. And they're some of the things that make you a good producer. And I think because I valued myself as a creative, I felt like I was a creative person. I always felt comfortable, you know, in giving feedback. Or, you know, like asking our creatives to look at it in a different way, you know, and I think that that's a really important skill for anyone who's interested in production. If they are creative, then speak up. You know, you don't have to be quiet and let the creatives guide everything, you know. You're there to help move it through that process and make sure that you're understanding what the client needs and what that creative needs and protecting everybody in the process and sort of, you know, helping drive it through. It's a fun thing to do.
Yeah, definitely. That's really good advice. What sort of things were you working on then? What kind of projects?
Back then, I was in London. It was in London, and the company that I worked for, called Steam, were doing a lot of work with the music industry. Actually, so we were, Warner Music was a big client of ours back then, and we were doing. It was, I mean, that was back when, you know, the Red Hot Chili Peppers were launching big albums, and Madonna was launching big albums. And I'm aging myself just by talking, and it was when people spend money on marketing. Those albums.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So we were doing like TV commercials. We were doing kind of what we called EPK content back then, which was, you know, all of the sort of marketing materials that went along with an album launch. We were doing some music videos, but it was a lot of TV commercials actually for album launches. I mean, this is before streaming. This was back when I used to run tapes to the networks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, it was a lot of motion graphics. And so, yeah. That was kind of, you know, obviously there was other work. There was other sort of marketing work as well.
Yeah.
But that was our bread and butter back then. The company has since moved on to doing a lot of live action content for musical theatre, actually. They do a lot of work for Broadway and the West End.
So what happened then? Where did you move to? Did you stay in London?
I stayed in London for a while and then I moved back to Australia. And I was only in Australia for a couple of years, actually. And I actually went back. They had the company I was working for in London also had a Sydney office. So I actually went back there and worked for the Sydney office. And we were working outside of the music industry then. We were doing, you know, a sort of range of marketing content, both live action design and motion graphics. And I was there for a couple of years. And then during that time, I applied for the Green Card Lottery, just looking for some new life opportunities and won it. And so moved to LA a couple of years later. And, you know, I always loved Buck. I, you know, back at the, in the, at the job in Sydney, I was constantly referencing Buck's work. You know, if we had a new, you know, we were trying to come up with a new brand identity for a network or something, for example, we'd pull, like, what is Buck doing? What, you know, what would Buck's POV be on this? Because they were always so groundbreaking and thinking about animation and design in new and innovative ways and kind of doing things that you hadn't seen before. So I was constantly referencing their work. And when I decided to move to LA, I just thought, you know what? I'm just going to send an email, apply for a job. I think I'd been in LA for about 12 months. I was working at a tiny little production company. It was great, but I, you know, wanted more and just shot an email off. And Ryan Honey, one of the founders of Buck, saw the email and I was pretty ballsy in that email. I wouldn't advise sending an email like that today.
How ballsy is pretty ballsy.
I mean, there were some words in there, you know, that I probably should say. I might have dropped the F-bomb. But anyway, whatever I did, it got that. You know, and that was really, yeah, and actually, you know, the sort of crux of that email was that I was talking about my love for the creative process and as a producer, how much I enjoy working with creatives and, you know, finding that balance of helping them, protecting them, but also knowing how to actually get stuff done and shipped off to client on time and on budget, which I think is it's a delicate balance, right? You want to protect the creatives, give them all the time in the world, but you've got a deadline. Anyway, so I crafted some kind of email and Ryan went, yeah, we've got to get this girl. So I think he appreciated my sense of humor.
I love the fact, I think it's easy to be kind of so in awe of people that you, well, companies that you respect like that, that you don't get in touch and you think, God, they'd never look at me or something. But I think that's fantastic. I mean, obviously it works. You look at you now, you'll see.
It worked.
Yeah.
I never thought it would work though. I kind of sent it going, well, that's done. See what happens, you know, and just kind of move on. And then when they got back to me, I was like, oh, it. And, you know, I was excited. So, yeah. And that was, gosh, I had my 12-year anniversary just in January. So, you know, it's been an incredible journey. And I think, gosh, I'm one of those people that is pretty restless in spirit. I'm constantly looking for the next thing and wanting to move and change and evolve. And the beauty of Buck is that I've been able to do that. And I think everybody at Buck has been able to do that because we are, we're ever moving. You know, we don't ever stay the same and we're not stagnant and we're, you know, growing into new areas, into new client opportunities, and everyone's having immense career growth at the same time. And gosh, I'm a testament to that. You know, I started as producer number two at Buck. And was able to just continually grow my career along with the company, which has been really exciting, you know, and yet really rewarding.
So what were you doing when you first started? What does a producer do at Buck?
Yeah, I remember my first job at Buck. It was for MTV and it was like a 60-second commercial and it was this kind of mind-bending commercial. I should dig it up and have a look at it now. It was so long ago, but it was this weird character that was walking on a globe that was constantly moving. So it was just like a character that didn't stop walking and all of his world changed around him. I remember, and the project was actually had just started. So I came in, but it had already kind of begun. And I remember sitting around the table at Dailies. I don't even know what Dailies was. I was like going back into my office and Googling terms all the time, sitting in Dailies. And there was like all of these incredible creative people around the boardroom table. All of these like opposing opinions and like ideas, and it was exciting. But I remember just going, "Who's in charge here? Like everybody's got so many thoughts and opinions." And that's really the beauty of Buck, I think, is that you know, like the intern who's in the design team is able to sit there and feel confident to say, "No, I think it should be this way." You know, and I'm like, we quite purposefully don't call people directors at Buck because we don't want that director lording over the project. You know, we have creative directors and they are in charge of the project creatively, but everybody has that kind of seat at the table and producers as well. So, you know, after a few weeks, when I gained a little bit of confidence, I would speak up and I would, you know, put my opinion forward. And I think it was really valued. And I think that's built into the culture at Buck, which is really fun. But it was like it was a trip. You know, I didn't really know character animation or anything. I remember going and Googling, what is tweening? Which is like the in-between frames in animation. I was like, there's so many things I had to learn. Yeah.
I think that's the thing, though, isn't it? You can do that and you can just go away and Google things and ask questions and get better. And
yeah.
I think it's as long as you're with a company that respects the juniors, respects their opinion, and hopefully will draw the best out of you.
Absolutely. And it was always, you know, there's also built into our culture that it is okay to ask questions. No one's experts in anything because we're constantly innovating into new processes and new tools. And so everybody's always asking questions and learning. There's a real curiosity built into the culture, which I think is wonderful. You know, so everybody has the opportunity to learn. I'm still learning every day, you know.
And that's why it's so exciting, isn't it? I mean, that's what I love, what I do. It's exactly the same thing. I'm just learning all the time and learn about so many different new types of businesses and types of things and animation and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, technology just evolves so quickly. So there's always something new to learn.
So what did you move on to after the production stuff? What's the next step?
Yeah. So I was a producer and then I was head of production. And then I was the EP of the LA office. And then I became the global head of production, which was executive producer. So the EP was, I mean, back then we were a smaller, the EP did a lot more kind of, I guess, kind of MD responsibilities as well. We didn't have robust HR or finance, you know, everyone was like they were all pretty small teams. So the EP is really looking after the business and the team of producers, of which it was smaller back then, and making sure that, you know, that the revenue's coming in and, you know, everything's delivering to margin, things like that. So that was fun. And then global head of production, then I essentially was looking after production globally, you know, looking after the full team of production and also the business side of things, like the revenue and the client and things like that. You know, obviously looking after financial viability of the company, but in a more sort of production-centric focus. And then I was the chief production officer, which meant that I was in the executive team working closely with the founders, with our COO and our CFO. That's, you know, and that was great, you know, and I learned a lot just by being amongst those peers. And then about 18 months ago, almost 2 years ago, I became the president. That was really the opportunity to be the president of Buck really came about because of what we were undertaking with merging and acquiring companies into our residence network. And because the executive team at Buck were moving and focusing into other companies that we were bringing into the family, bringing into the fold, it gave me that opportunity to really focus on Buck. And I got promoted into the president role, and then that evolved into the CEO role this year. Kind of a wild, progressive journey. Yeah.
That's a really exciting journey. So when did Buck get offices or studios around the world? Have you always been global, or did you start in LA and sort of build from there?
Yeah, so the first office was LA, and then New York opened a couple. So Buck actually just is 20 years this year.
20 years.
So 20 years ago. Yeah, 20 years ago founded in LA. And the three founders are still the active partners of Buck. So we've still got the same ownership. They grew into New York a couple of years later, and one of the partners started up the New York studio. And then New York and LA ran for quite a while. I'm not going to tell you the exact years because I'm going to totally get them wrong. but Sydney was the next off. Amsterdam, we opened in, I think it was 2020. And then London, we just opened last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exciting stuff. So just in case anyone doesn't know, the residence group is basically the overall holding group, would you call it? And you're adding companies into it.
Yeah, so Residence was founded by Buck and by the partners of Buck. What they really wanted to do was create a creative network of companies who are really all working together to inspire creativity, to foster creative communities, and to do incredible creative services work as well. And so Buck is a part of that. You know, and we've brought in some other incredible companies as well, really expanding on what we're able to do for our clients. But also, like I said, just making sure that we're really inspiring the next generation of creatives.
So tell me about your sort of CEO role today and what it involves.
Spreadsheets. Numbers. <Yeah. laughs> No, I mean, it's an incredible responsibility, super rewarding, super fun. It's lucky. I love budgets. You know, I sort of laugh and just say it's kind of like a really massive live action production, you know, like with shoots in multiple cities, huge post-production schedule, like just trying to figure that out and budget it and make sure that it's all running to budget. It's kind of like running a company. But, you know, I'm involved in the strategy of the direction of the company. Where are we going? How are we going to grow? In what regions? Are we going to grow capabilities? What are we doing about AI? How do we operate more efficiently as a company? How do we collaborate across the companies? How do we collaborate across our systems globally? And then also financial viability, you know, budgeting out the year, projecting revenue, obviously working closely with my CFO, who's incredible. Yeah. And then just, looking after the teams that are involved in business development and sales, and making sure our sales pipeline is full, making sure we're converting those sales and, you know, really keeping across all of the kind of business intelligence that we have, keeping close to it and making sure that we're delivering everything to plan. So my job is to devise and deliver a plan.
Complex. Yeah. Yeah. Rewarding, but.
Rewarding, stressful, complex, but yeah. Fun. Yeah.
Can I ask you what you are doing about AI, or could that be a whole separate podcast in itself?
Oh my God, that can be a whole separate podcast with AI experts. But look, AI is here. We're using it. I like to talk about AI as like it's just another tool in our tool belt right now. It's like a new Photoshop brush. It is something that we are all using. We're training our staff on. We're being very careful about its use. Obviously, we want to make sure that we're not doing anything we're not going to be proud of in 5 years. We're careful, but we're an innovative company. We're really hungry for new technologies, ways to use those technologies, ways to innovate our process and be better at what we do. AI is just going to make us a little bit faster. You know, we're probably going to be able to do more in less time. I do believe that there is a place for creativity and creatives to thrive, even in the world when the robots are doing some of that work. You know, we're going to have to curate that work. We're going to have to guide that work. Innovation can thrive outside of AI. AI, you know, as a tool is pulling from things that already exist, you know, creating new things out of those things that exist. But you know, we still need humans to think about what's next.
Yeah, think about what's next, what we're creating and what we're feeding into it. And I'm really interested in it. It's huge, isn't it? I think it's hugely exciting. But obviously comes with a whole set of problems with the whole thing, but there's so much
more.
Do and speed up on, and
I think it is it's a very exciting tool for creatives to have at their disposal, and I don't think designers should be afraid of it. I think designers need to embrace it. It's going to be a part of what we do and how we do it, but it also allows us to do things that we haven't been able to do before.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. So, can I ask you about what inspires you as a creative? What do you have do you have things in particular that you do to inspire yourself and maybe just to get away from things actually and not look at spreadsheets? Or do you just become inspired by the work that you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm endlessly inspired by the work that Buck does and the people that are doing the work. To be honest, like my day-to-day, I'm taken further away from the creative process than I was when I was a producer. As a producer, it's like that's your whole day. You're breathing that process. Yeah. I do. Oh, I mean, God, do I? Yeah, a little.
So sometimes it's easy to miss things and see them through a different lens, isn't it? That you think it's all
exactly.
But you're like, oh, hold on.
Exactly. The client services part of it was like, you know, it's difficult. It's challenging, like trying to manage that alongside, because we, you know, we don't have an accounts team at Buck. Our production team are our account managers. They're the first point of contact with the client. They're also, you know, running the creative team, and it's like balancing a lot of things at once. It was difficult. Challenging, but very rewarding. And obviously being a part of that creative process was incredible. But I'm like inspired. Like we have a company meeting a global company meeting every month, and we do work shares in that meeting. So each office pulls together like the most exciting work that they've done that month, and we play it out, and we do some kind of more in-depth kind of case studies on some of the work and showing some of the process. I'm just in awe every time, because sometimes that's the first time I'm seeing that spot or that piece of work. And it is incredible and incredibly inspiring to see what everybody at Buck is doing each month. It's really wonderful. That inspires me. And then like outside of work, I mean, I don't know. I'm a mom. It's like.
Yeah. It's that, yeah, same.
Yeah. So I really love, you know, going to galleries with her. I'm making sure that she's able to tap into that creative side of herself as well. Her father, my husband, is a writer and a director. So we are a creative family. So we're constantly, you know, we're going to galleries and she's drawing and writing, and I watch a lot of movies, I guess. Yeah. I still love, you know, the film world.
Yeah.
It's still like a passion of mine. Yeah. Yeah.
Very inspirational. Absolutely. So can I talk to you then about the sort of creative industry as a whole? Like, do you feel part of it? Do you get involved in it? What do you think of the whole thing?
Yeah. I mean, the creative services as a business is an incredible industry to be in. I think that Buck's in a unique position because of our scale and size and our global footprint to kind of be in a position where we're a little bit different to like a pure design company. We're a little bit different to a motion graphics kind of production company. Yeah, we're a little bit different to a traditional agency. Ever have before because of the way that we interact with our clients. So I think that we're in this kind of fun and unique position, especially as we expand on the companies that we're bringing into residence, where Buck's sitting kind of in a slightly different space, which is exciting, I think. You know, when people ask who our direct competitors are, like, for which piece of work? Like, for that piece of work, that was our competitor. For this piece of work, it was that, or for, you know, different kind of relationships or things that we're doing, it can change. And I think that's exciting. I'm inspired by what other companies are doing and inspired by the industry as a whole. But I also like that I feel like we're doing it a little bit differently and having companies like It's Nice That, If You Could, Creative Lives in Progress, they're all incredibly inspiring for us at engaging the creative community, inspiring creativity, giving back and helping find a career and a viable career for creatives who may not know that it exists. And that's a real passion of mine as well. Making sure that people understand that, hey, if you're creative, it doesn't mean you need to be a starving artist. There's a really viable career here and you get to make incredible work in the process.
Massively. I think Creative Lives in Progress do such great work on that. It's, yeah, a lot of the agencies I know are all involved in Creative Lives in Progress because it's just persuading parents as well that it's a good option for their kids.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're not going to become an starving artist just because you want to go to the creative industries. There's loads of really exciting, well-paid roles here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I actually did a speech at a presentation at a local, what we call a middle school here in the US. It's like, I don't know, like 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, I think it was. And that, you know, I showed some of the work that we did. I talked about Buck and I talked about the creative arts and the ability to kind of have a fruitful career in what we do. And they were just blown away. One of the kids at the end was like, how much do you pay a designer? And I was like, oh God, like, what am I saying? Like, I think the salary is going to be higher than the teacher's salary. Oh God. But yeah, and I was like, I think the starting salary is around about, anyway. And the kid was like, oh my God. But it's like those moments, right? That you know, you don't think that a designer can actually earn good money. You're like, oh, well, I'm just painting pictures or drawing. Like, how am I going to make that a career? But, you know, it is a career and you've got that. Yeah, and you've got that ability to grow your career too. If you want to become a master craftsperson, or if you feel like you would much more prefer to guide the creative process, you know, like that career growth into directing and things like that. It can be a long career and a really fruitful career. And I think so many kids don't even know.
Definitely. Did you show them all your Spider-Man, Spider-Verse work?
Oh yeah. It was like mind blown. Yeah, yeah, that and some other kind of things that we've done as well. And they were just really inspired. Yeah, I accidentally played some stuff that was like kind of a little bit not safe for work or not safe for school. I was like, oh, okay, pause. But yeah, They thought I was very cool, and I'm not cool. Buck is cool. The work that we do is cool.
No, that's fantastic. Well, that's the whole thing. If I'd been at school and someone would have showed me that kind of, I didn't realize that could be a job that people actually earn through it. Obviously, it's all around you, but you just, I didn't see it in that way.
Yeah. And I think it's so important for us to keep talking about that. And, you know, and it's more than just like the sort of traditional design schools as well, you know, because it's really, I'm also really passionate about making sure that we continue to push diversity in our industry, which is traditionally, you know, we traditionally pluck people from colleges that are expensive to attend, you know, for people that have had the opportunity to be able to go to those kind of design schools. And there's so much untapped potential and talent out there and people that don't know that that's a viable option. So trying to find potential in a portfolio rather than a polish, I think is really important, and training interns and giving alternative moments of study outside of those traditional design schools as well, I think is important so that we're pushing diversity across across the industry.
Interesting. Yeah, my next question was all about the more challenging aspects of the industry and the creative industries. And I'd assume that would be the sort of thing that it is really challenging, isn't it? So.
Yeah. You know, we're trying to hold ourselves accountable as a company, and it's challenging, of course, but we're reporting on our impact in many ways. We're pulling together our first impact report this year to report on last year.
Are you?
Yeah, we are. It's a work in progress. It's like gathering data and things like that is always really challenging, but we're making a good effort at it. And making sure that we're reporting back to our employees what our makeup is and what we're doing about it. And our talent team are really invested in making sure that we're going outside traditional areas and traditional ways of finding talent so that we can make sure that we're continuing to push that diversity as well.
See, that I went to a really interesting talk earlier today, actually. It's all about apprenticeships and how you don't necessarily need to get a degree. An apprenticeship,
no,
way of doing it. There's an apprenticeship program that's UK-based at the moment, but it's going to go worldwide. And it's basically, it's giving it will give you a degree in the end. You get paid to do it and you get work in some of the best creative agencies. This one was with Havas. And it's just...
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Because, you know, kids that can't afford to go to art school, that's a viable option for them
absolutely.
To learn. And learn on the job. There's no better training, really.
That's it, round of the job. But also so much of the teaching, it's the School of Communication Arts, so much of the teaching is going to be done through headsets, Quest headsets, you know, the Meta headsets. So it's no matter where you are in the world, you can just attend. You can also see past debates of students being told about different projects, and you can really get into the heads of the right creatives, basically. I think it's quite game-changing. I think it's the technology.
That's awesome.
Leveling.
Yeah, technology creates a lot of opportunity for education, doesn't it?
Definitely. Yeah, I think
it's exciting.
And then I ask you a final question, actually, what sort of tips would you give to juniors starting out today?
Yeah, so send an email swearing at the... No, don't do what Emily did. Just hone your craft. Make sure that you're looking at the world and being inspired by what's going on. Find your own style. You don't need to kind of copy other people. Like being different and doing something that kind of breaks the mold can get attention. You know, apply for internships. If you feel like you've got something, then show people. Don't be afraid to show your craft and show your art to the world, because you never know who's going to see it. And I think that social media has been that's one of the good things about social media. It's been incredible for artists to be able to gain attention and get their work out there in the world. And don't be afraid to like reach out to companies that inspire you and see if there's internships available. Attend portfolio reviews whenever you see them. Creative Lads in Progress do some great portfolio reviews as well. Buck does them as well. I think getting feedback from creatives on your work and learning from them, you know, just don't be afraid to ask and build up your portfolio and put your best work forward. And
yeah,
just keep trying. Yeah.
That's really important. Keep trying. And I mean, even the portfolio reviews, it's all about meeting the right people as well and making the right contacts. And people
totally
have time. If you approach them at the right times, people will have time to spend with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Find out who the people are who are resourcing freelancers at each of the companies. You know, ask who they are, ask for their emails. send them your portfolios, ask for feedback on that portfolio. You know, everyone's really busy, but you'll find people that have the time and people that want to nurture new talent as well.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. Emily, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really, really enjoyed talking to you.
Well, thank you for having me. Like I said, it's really nice to have someone come out of that production background and really talk about creativity. I was happy to be invited and really enjoyed our conversation.
Oh, thank you very much.